We're now joined by Charlotte Morgan, who is the Hello. Museum Manager at Cannon Valley Museum and also the Trustee of the Welsh Federation of Museums and Art Galleries. Thank you for joining us, Charlotte.
Thank you for having me.
Just to kind of kick us off, would you be happy to tell us a bit more about Cannon Valley Museum and a bit about the history and culture of the Valley?
Of course. So the Cannon Valley Museum was opened in 2001 by the local authority. Unfortunately, it was a early victim of government cuts, and it did close in 2014. However, the community here decided that they didn't want that to happen. They campaigned against the closure. Essentially, that wasn't successful, and the museum still did close, but what formed out of that group was a working group, which then formed a charity, which is who I now work for, who successfully reopened the museum in 2016. So we were closed for just over 2 years, and we've been reopened now as an independent museum for nearly three, which is very exciting. We've obviously had a lot of challenges kind of changing the building from a local authority building to a charity building. Mm. And there's lots of things about cables being in the wrong place and lots of complicated things that I had to deal with. But it's been really great. And what's lovely is that I work in a community who just love and adore their museum, so much so that they formed a charity in order to save it. The heritage of the Valley is broad. There's been sort of inhabitants here for as long as we have history, really. And there's an awful lot to be celebrated in recent times as well. So the Stereophonics are from the Cannon Valley. Yay. Tom Jones used to sort of practice in a pub down the road. The Welsh National Anthem was written here in Aberdare.
Wow.
So we do have an awful lot of modern culture as well as sort of history to reflect on, and that's what we do here. We've got two temporary galleries as well, which we host around 20 different artists every year, sort of doing a new exhibition, contemporary art, and various bits and bobs really that's kind of produced from the community. So that's what we're about in a nutshell.
Fantastic. So there's a real mix of the history and the more contemporary exhibitions that you do. That sounds really exciting.
Absolutely. I see it as not being two separate things, really, in the fact that it's kind of, in order to reflect on history, you have to like think about culture today and what's going on now.
Yeah.
And we do that in our shop with our locally produced stuff, but we also do it in the galleries by showcasing the amazing talent that's still here. So it's not constantly talking about what used to be or, you know, the good old days. It's kind of a continuation, so we can still have that ambition and those aspirations now.
Absolutely. It's so inspiring. Yeah, it's lovely. I just love that story that that the museum was continued by the people that cared about it as well. I just love that aspect.
It still baffles me, like, every single day when I talk about it. It shouldn't really happen. You know, the classic story is government cuts, museum closes, and that's kind of where it ends normally. But the fact that even there was a campaign against the closure in the first place is an amazing act of, like, local protest.
Yeah.
But for that to actually turn into something and still be going, I think, you know, the trust itself turns four this year. You know, to still be going, to be running the museum in a nearly sustainable way is just a phenomenal achievement for those people.
Yes, I mean, you obviously achieved a lot in like a relatively short space of time. I know you did touch upon that transition as well from being a local authority museum to an independent museum, but do you kind of have anything more kind of in terms of like logistically about that transition?
A surprising amount of it is about utilities and internet connections and phones.
The cables.
And like that. Cables. I spent my first month kind of running around the place, ringing the person who used to work here before and saying, why doesn't this radiator work? Or how do I turn the electricity off in this part of the building? But I think that is part of how the heritage sector is growing and changing. And as we become more versatile or there's more independent museums, you know, museum management isn't just about curating or conservation or even engagement anymore. It is about literally managing buildings. So there was a lot of that element of it, but there was also kind of a lot of work that we did engagement-wise to rebuild our visitor base. We've got a cafe on site, which has been really great because that's helped kind of draw people back to the building. But equally logistically with that, it's sublet, and that was a whole other kettle of fish in itself. So we had to do a lot of kind of work because we were closed for 2 years, so it's kind of hard. You kind of get forgotten quite easily. Even when there is that campaign to save the museum, there's still that level of actually you have to visit and you have to come, otherwise it won't be here. Yeah. So it's kind of that use it or lose it mentality. So we had to do quite a lot of work around that. And then the other kind of main bit was the volunteers. So on top of myself, I've got 4 colleagues who are a mix of various part-time roles. We have about 50 volunteers at the museum.
Wow, that's so great. What a huge number. That's amazing.
That's just, again, another branch of how amazing this place is. When I first started, I got given this big kind of list of names and phone numbers of people who'd all said they wanted to help but didn't want to be a trustee. So my first couple of days was just frantically kind of cold calling all of these people and saying, hello, you don't know me, but... there was about 50 people on that list. And although we've kind of had fluctuations in between, we have about 50 now. A mix of people. Some people are, you know, your classic kind of retired volunteer, wants to give something back to the community. We've got job seekers. We've got people looking for specific experience. We've got a real kind of mix of people. And that's been a great way to kind of promote the museum and also talk about our change in identity in the community as well, because the volunteers can do that for us. Less formal.
Yeah, just going out there and being ambassadors for what you do, yeah. Sounds like the mix of volunteers as well is just a programme in itself in terms of, like, engaging the community and giving people kind of a way of engaging with this piece of heritage.
Definitely, and it's a really lovely thing, I think, for them to be able to mix and meet people who they wouldn't come into contact with in their normal life. Mm. So I think, you know, now on the desk I've got a sort of late 20s single mum who has migrated here. She's trying to improve her English skills, and that's why she's volunteering, which is phenomenal. We've got a guy who's coming for sort of confidence building. He's got autism and he's just kind of coming to kind of get used to socializing with people. And I've got a retired yoga teacher. So the mix is great. It was volunteers week last week. We had everyone in for a nice big dinner at the end of the week, and we put big old pasta in the middle of the table. And it's just so good to see all of these cross sections of people coming together, and they've got one thing in common, which is they like the museum. But the things they can learn from each other and the things that we can learn from them as an organisation as well is the wealth of expertise and knowledge and information that they have.
Yeah, absolutely. We wanted to ask a bit more around how the change to independent museum affected your visitors.
Before the museum closed, it was... I didn't really engage with the museum a huge amount before it closed. I didn't live here, but from what I've heard from people, it was a proper museum. And it had a proper art gallery that drew in, you know, phenomenally talented artists from across the world. But really what we've tried to do, obviously, we're run by the community through the trust now, but we're trying to have a much more democratic approach to what we do. So the galleries might host... 1 week a internationally renowned artist, the next it might be a local art society. So we really try and kind of mix those things up. So I would love to be able to say, I mean, I don't have any evidence for it, but I would really like to think that our visitors are diversified and people feel a little bit more ownership over the building. We've tried to do that with our room hire as well. We're very lucky that the building came with some spaces that were ideal for redeveloping into business hire rooms. but they're kind of used beyond that. So both we have a LGBT plus support group that come into the museum and use one of the meeting rooms. And that's kind of developed into a partnership. So we do events together around LGBT History Month, or we did stuff around Transgender Awareness Week. So we don't kind of treat anyone as like a one-off. We try and build relationships with people. It was amazing that that group felt like they could approach us to start with, but we may as well utilise those groups who are engaging with us and build something a bit more meaningful. It could just be a room hire, and that would be a lovely source of income, but actually it's more than that. We're not precious about it being a museum, even though I love museums, objects are amazing, and that's what we're here for. If people don't feel like they can engage with what's here in their own way, then there's no point really. Like the LGBT group that we worked with, Pride Month last year, we came in one weekend and there were staff around, but we'd not kind of been into the gallery, and we walked in and they just hung flags everywhere. And it's just those really simple acts of, they really believe that they can do that because it's their space. You know, there was no kind of tiptoeing around the fact that it's a museum. It was just, let's hang some flags up and let's do it. And that was really nice, because that's what we aim for. I suppose it's partly because we have got such a small staff team. We haven't got the time to kind of stress about those things, or we haven't got the time to kind of worry too much about it. And it's kind of, we'll cover everything we need to cover, and then if something happens, then it happens, and we just roll with it. It's kind of always been our attitude, because we haven't had the people or the time or the resources to kind of sit down and, like, you know, write out every 20 seconds of an event and how it's going to happen.
So the perfect example of a museum kind of growing with its community, I guess, like acting as like a living space rather than just here's a snapshot of a time.
And it's kind of like, it's a bit of, it feels like a bit of a fusion between like the more modern stuff and the community engaging with the more traditional like exhibitions and things that you do. That's really cool. It's really
part of my job is doing all of this, but it is down to our visitors and our community and our volunteers, who, like, those people come in and they utilize the building. You know, we wouldn't be able to do all of that if they weren't willing to do that anyway. So it is amazing.
Well, now I kind of want to pick your brains a bit, actually, about regulation, our favorite thing. But it would be great to kind of get your take on the regulation structure in Wales, and how that kind of impacted the transition for your museum and kind of how you work towards it at the moment.
So not many people really know much about how museums are sort of led in Wales, and it is slightly different to England. I worked in museums in England for a couple of years before moving to Wales. So the museum development system doesn't really exist in the same way as it does in England, in that our museum development exists in the form of a Welsh Government department. So it's quite difficult for us to have independent conversations with them, although they are a wonderful group of people and the work they do for museums across Wales is fantastic. It's not quite the same as having the museum development officers that exist in England, who can give you kind of independent advice and support you kind of off the record, whereas obviously because it's a government division, there's a little bit more procedure to go through there. We do have the Welsh Federation of Museums, of which I'm a trustee, but we are all volunteer trustees. The committee is run entirely by volunteers who are already working in museums in Wales. Very busy people, so everything we try and do it is on top of already very stretched day jobs. But we do training for professionals in Wales. We do a conference once a year. We have the Welsh Museums Festival, which is normally in October every year, which is kind of like a week-long celebration of the amazing stuff that Welsh museums do.
We love to go to that.
So it is different. It's by no means better or worse necessarily. It's just a little bit more tied in with government than in England. I remember some of the conversations I had with my museum development officers when I worked in England, and there's no way I'd kind of ring the Welsh government and have those same conversations with them. And that's fine. It's just a different network, really.
Yes.
The museum sector in Wales is small. Everyone knows everyone. It's a really inclusive community of people who can help. It's just slightly different, really.
Another question we wanted to ask, sort of our final question, really, is what's the big thing that you want to achieve? What does the museum want to achieve this year? Is there one big thing on the agenda?
Standard answer to that is always sustainability. Obviously, we cut most of our ties with the local authority, but transition is a long process. So we've been in it for nearly 4 years now. Mm. 3 years of having run the building, and there are still a couple of things that are looked after by the council. So that's the big thing. We aim to be self-sustainable by 2021, but we're moving closer and closer to that. You know, the last financial year we were about 2-3% off reaching our target. So we're really happy with that. That doesn't include staff costs, and that's the big change for the next few years. So as we move nearer 2021, less and less of our staff team is funded. So that's the big challenge, really, is finding money to support those things. But really for us, we're moving into a bigger project that we want to do around the interpretation that we have in the museum, and about diversifying the interpretation that we have, so making sure the breadth of the community is represented. So we'll hopefully be kickstarting that off late this year, early next year, with a 1-year-long engagement programme focusing on the LGBT community, and that will be working with the support group that meet in the museum. And that will be a springboard then for doing some really nice projects with different communities, so that we can make sure when we redo the interpretation later down the line, we have a much more representative and diverse museum for people to visit.
Mm-hmm. Incredible.
Yeah, actually, I have to say, anyone listening should definitely have a look at your website, because there's just so many great pictures of how you're using the spaces in the museum and how you're kind of diversifying those audiences through the spaces.
Thank you
for telling us all about your journey with the museum. And I'm going to say, Charlotte, like, please, can you just speak for us again somehow? Because I just found that so interesting.
Thanks.
Thanks.